Welcome to the Full Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 9:18 British Summer Time. Today is May 7th, and of course, today being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. This really has been an eventful week. I guess they're all eventful, but this one has been particularly eventful. And I think as we come into the close on a Friday evening, investors are asking themselves, are we now in a situation après le déluge, after the flood, or is this just the beginning of a storm? And I suspect that would really depend, the answer to that will depend very much on which asset class you're talking about. The panicky situation that developed yesterday has had a knock-on effect right across markets today. So, Asia was hit this morning with the Nikkei down over 3%. The TOPIX banks were down probably a bit more than that. And the second section, which has been a tower of strength in the Japanese market, also pulled back sharply today. So, caps that had advanced probably at least in the short term, potentially in the medium term. The Chinese market was also weaker, and the Hang Seng was down 1%. The A-share market was down something similar, but that's following really quite a weak day yesterday already. So the Chinese market remains a negative leash for countries that depend on economic growth in China for their prosperity. The European markets were also weak in here today, with the CAC in France down 4.6%. The Euro Stoxx 50 was down 4.25%. The Dutch market was down over 4%, and the vast majority of other markets were down between 2 and just over 3%. There was a heightened degree of volatility in some of these markets, where early on in the session, some of them were trading in positive territory. The Spanish market was one of those. At one point, it was up over 2%, but closed down just over 3.25%. And into the close on Wall Street, having also been relatively sanguine early on, the Nasdaq is closing. The Nasdaq Composite is closing down 2.3%. The S&P is down 1.5%. The Dow Jones is down 1.33%. That, though, is still well off yesterday's lows, which were really quite extraordinary. A wit. John Clapier, who sends us his note every day, had a useful quote in there today, and that was that you can't put the nails back in the pipe bomb once it's gone off. And what the decline yesterday and the subsequent weakness has done is to really take away the confidence of investors here, and there is plenty to be worried about. There's this the program traders that while in the best of times adding liquidity, all tend to move in the same direction when something goes against them and can exacerbate moves, really got burned yesterday. You have the European sovereign debt crisis, and it's probably no longer apt to say that this is a Greek, specifically Greek crisis, because those sovereign spreads for peripheral countries, not just in the Eurozone but also in Eastern Europe, are pushing upwards. And the CDS spreads are also breaking upwards. So you have the reality that, I suppose, one of the best ways to put it is that during the Nasdaq bubble, people used to say that earnings didn't matter. Well, in the credit bubble, they said that risk didn't matter. And we are very abruptly being disabused of that notion over the last couple of years. And this is now the turn of the sovereign sector. Following the debut of the euro, so many of those European countries traded at negligible spreads to bunds. But the reality is that they do not have the same fiscal characteristics as Germany, and the way that sovereign spreads are now breaking upwards and pushing out to wider levels is in search of an equilibrium level that is representative of the risk that that is attached to those individual sovereigns. And we haven't found it yet, which would suggest that these spreads are going to get wider. And that means that the cost of capital for Italy, Spain, Portugal, and Ireland is going to continue to get wider. And we don't know how much wider that is going to get, but that comes with associated pressures. And most particularly, that will come for associated pressures for the people holding their debt. Because, on the one hand, if you own a bond that you can hold to maturity, then the yield that you've bought it at is locked in. But if someone is marking their book to market, those bonds are losing value as those spreads widen, particularly against German bunds. So that is already causing a problem for some of the financial institutions, particularly who own such huge swathes of these bonds. I posted an excellent illustration from the New York Times on Wednesday, and I put a link to it in today's comment of the day, to the intertwining of sovereign debt between those five main peripheral Eurozone countries that have attained that agricultural acronym. But looking at those CDS spreads today, with so many of those Eastern European countries breaking their more than year-long progressions of lower highs, it does suggest that there is a greater risk that this contagion will spread beyond the Eurozone and into some of those newer EU member states. So that has the added potential to cause worry here. There are, of course, additional worries that the regulatory reform in the USA is so far relatively non-existent and really bogged down. And there is the Chinese attempts to slow down the property market. And if there is any certainty, we can be reasonably sure that they are going to continue to tighten until they get the desired result. And with the price of Shanghai property hitting new highs in April, that does suggest that we can expect further tightening measures coming from China over the coming months. And that gives a lot for investors to be worried about. But each market needs to be judged on its own merits. And certainly stock markets are taking the brunt of the selling in Europe and in the USA at the moment. And some of those Asian countries, which have been somewhat overextended, and Indonesia in particular has been really quite overextended compared to its moving average, are at risk of reversionary pullback. But the center of this crisis is in the way that governments became overstretched relative to their ability to pay back their debts. And that is a problem primarily for European and the UK and US governments. That's not a problem for a country like Brazil. It's certainly not a problem for a country like China, or indeed most of the emerging markets. They learned their lessons from the Asian financial crisis. They haven't become overextended, and they haven't bought fraudulent debt instruments. So they're in a much better position. That doesn't mean that they're not going to fall in a concerted bout of selling or deflationary fears that might arise. But it does suggest that they're probably going to find support first. That if they do fall, if they do pull back to their 200-day moving averages, or if they do fall even further than that, that provided they find support ahead of other markets, we can continue to designate them as leaders. And leaders generally tend to outperform in the early stages of an advance. So those fuller money themes that have been outperforming for a number of months are probably worth watching in terms of the next good buying opportunity. Gold really showed its safe haven status, its status as the ultimate safe haven yesterday, and pushed above the $1,200 level for the first time in a number of months. And it held that advance in here today. Now, the treasury markets rallied spectacularly yesterday and gave up some of that advance in here today. The US Treasury is closing at 122.03, and the high of the day today was at 124.02. So a really quite a large range on the day. And the high yesterday, I think, was even higher than 124. So US Treasuries have pulled back somewhat from an accelerated advance. And the yen also appreciated really quite spectacularly against a number of currencies, but has weakened somewhat. So gold is, to one extent or another, it's a, well, I should also mention the US dollar, which had a huge move yesterday. Against a number of currencies, but gave up a good portion of it in here today. The downward dynamics for the yen and the dollar and US treasuries are not countermanding dynamics, and they will need to weaken further if the to signify that some or to indicate that this panicky period has passed. But looking at gold, it stands out as the safe haven trade that has held the vast majority of yesterday's gain, and it's closing out down 17 cents. Having been as low as 11.93 earlier on today, it recouped the entire loss to close well above the $1,200 level once more. And elsewhere in the precious metals sector, we have palladium, which had a look at 495 earlier on today, but closed in the region of 513. So finding support in the region of that psychological 500 level. Platinum was as low as 1645 and finished just marginally down on the day at 1663. And the real stellar performer today was silver, which had a look at 1747 and closed at 1840, so almost a dollar off its lows, and it was up more than a dollar earlier on today. And silver has recouped almost its entire loss this week, so it has a really big downside tail on the weekly candle, which suggests that demand came back in no uncertain terms in here today. Then we look at gold shares, which didn't move at all yesterday. So that tells us a number of things. One is that gold continues to be regarded and is probably increasingly being regarded as the ultimate safe haven trade. Gold shares are not being punted in by program traders. Now, that is potentially because they're not big enough. But it does suggest that participation in that gold share market is less than it could be, particularly with gold pushing on to test all-time highs. And activity in the silver market suggests that there is a lot of interest in getting some sort of leverage to the gold price, and we've often referred to silver as high beta gold. And this looks like a gold looks like it can go higher from here. It's been messy, it's been volatile, it's had $50 ranges on in the space of a couple of days on a number of occasions in the last few months, and the range that it put in below the $1,150 level was messy, rangy, volatile. But it is now pushing upwards once more, and beginning to look consistent. Palladium has had an equal-sized reaction. It pulled back remarkably sharply, but it's an equal-sized reaction to the same to the reaction that it had back in January, and appears to be finding some support. And when we then contrast those precious metals with some of the industrial metals, we have nickel finding support in the region of $20,000, copper finding support in the region of $3, zinc found support above $2,000. So while the industrial metal complex has pulled back sharply over the last couple of weeks, and particularly over the last few days, it's finding support in well, it's in the first area of potential support, and appears to be finding demand appears to be coming back in that region. So looking at something like nickel, it would need to take out that 20,000 level. Copper would need to take out that $3 level to signify that this is anything other than a normal reaction, correction, to be more precise, within the overall medium-term bull market. So, while the risk premium attached to markets has increased considerably over the last 48 hours, most particularly in stock markets, and particularly then in the stock markets of Europe and some of those that have become particularly overextended relative to their moving averages. But it is also providing buying opportunities. And we don't have conclusive evidence that some of these commodities in particular are finding support and a meaningful support that is rock solid. We won't have that for probably quite a while. But they haven't pulled back nearly as much as some of these stock markets. They're finding support exactly where they need to, whereas a number of these stock markets are testing their 200-day moving averages and really do need to rally in quite emphatic fashion from in a relatively short period of time if they're to hold above their 200-day moving average, sustain their progressions of higher reaction lows, not pull back into their previous ranges. Those would all be major inconsistencies, and there are a number of indices that are testing those sorts of levels right now. So if we don't get a meaningful rally in the next few days, then this will look like a bigger corrective phase, for particularly for some of those markets that are more troubled by these debt issues. On the other hand, while the Wall Street leash effect remains negative, and it is certainly negative right now, the S&P, having pulled back sharply yesterday and being down 1.5% today, is now at its 200-day moving average, and it has sustained its progression of higher reaction lows. So it's in the area where it needs to find support. And whether it does or not is an unknowable, but we know what to look for. If it begins to range in this area and we see some downward dynamic, or sorry, upward dynamics that are gradually pulled back from, and then more upward dynamics, then we'll know that we're getting some bullish trampolining and that there is demand returning in this area. If, however, we see that some of these markets, like for example the S&P, sustains a move below its 200-day moving average, takes out the February low, then that will suggest that we've moved into a more corrective phase, that this is a medium-term top, and that it could be a number of months before they have built enough support or put enough of ground between underneath them to support higher levels. So we remain in a relatively high-risk environment, but I think it's important to bear in mind exactly where these problems are focused, and to what extent some of the better performing markets in emerging, particularly in the emerging world, are going to be influenced. This isn't going to derail the expansion of the global middle class, and this isn't going to derail the commodity super cycle driven by that greatest urbanization in history. What it does suggest is that the ability of Europe to get past this crisis is likely to is certainly being questioned, and is probably going to take more time than most people were thinking. Interest rates are likely to stay lower for longer, and while some of the hawks at the Bundesbank might like to begin raising interest rates to curtail nascent inflationary pressures, inflation's not going to be a problem in the for the at least the foreseeable future, with the oil price massive key reversal this week, pulling back to the $75 area, testing its progression of higher reaction lows, and testing the 200-day moving average. It's looking a lot like some of these stock markets, and again, we know what it has to do. It has to find support in this area. We need to see some upward dynamics to indicate that demand is returning. And if it sustains a move below its, or breaks its progressions of higher reaction lows, well, then that is going to be a further signal that we're into a more corrective phase. But with oil prices coming down, and that is likely to ease inflationary pressures to a certain extent. Wages are not going to be an inflationary pressure in here, and neither are manufactured goods. So the inflationary pressures that people would have been thinking about over the last 6 months to a year are certainly not a problem right now. Deflation is probably more likely to be the topic of conversation going forward. And in the Eurozone, one can only imagine that they're praying for an orderly decline in the currency, because in the competitive world of globalization, there is no country wants a strong currency, but some need one more than others. And right now, the Eurozone needs a weak currency more than just about anybody else. So while we have some talk at the ECB of attempting to, of being wary of the speed of the euro's decline, I don't think that they'd be particularly worried about the direction in which the euro is moving. And certainly a weaker euro would help to make the manufacturing basis, particularly in some of those weaker southern European countries, much more competitive. So we can anticipate that the euro will continue to get weaker, and will be won't get an awful lot of support from the various governments, or indeed Central Bank of Europe, for a good while yet. In the rest of the world, particularly in Asia and Latin America, this what we've seen is a remarkable move over the last year, and particularly in a country like Indonesia, it became really quite overextended compared to the 200-day moving average, and some consolidation of those gains does appear likely. But then you look at something like Brazil, which has been ranging above 60,000 for much, and just below the all-time high, which is in the region of about 74,000, if my memory serves me correctly, for much of the last 8 or 9 months. And that's another market where one really wouldn't like to see it come below 60,000, because that would suggest that this ranging phase below the high has turned into a medium-term top rather than a consolidation before it can push on to new high ground. We certainly remain in a corrective phase for stock markets. There is no evidence that it is over just yet, but we are certainly being presented with interesting opportunities. My original strategy with shorting the Nasdaq was because it was overextended compared to the moving average, and my full intention had been to wait for it to begin to find support and reverse the position to go long. Well, it reverted to the mean yesterday and bounced significantly off of it, and it's down 2% in here today. Which and I closed out the position last night because I didn't like the action. I wasn't willing to sit with it because I think that the predictability of which direction markets are going to go in the very short term has degraded really quite considerably. So the Nasdaq has been a leading market, and technology shares have been outperformers, but they have also run significantly far ahead beyond their mean levels, which we define by the 200-day moving average, and they're probably in need of some correction. But once they come back and do find support, then we're likely to be presented with good buying opportunities. There are a number of challenges facing markets right now, and what we can, if we attempt to telescope out a little bit, we can anticipate that sentiment is going to deteriorate. There is, I think, confusion is prevailing at the moment, but that confusion, and there's a lot of evidence in stock markets today, particularly to support that confusion is leading to selling, and selling leads to a deterioration of sentiment, and that's hardly surprising given the extent of the declines, particularly this week. So we could see markets move lower from here if they don't find support, and they do need to find support really rather urgently at current levels if scope for additional lower trading or testing of underlying trading is going to be avoided. But that deterioration in sentiment, when it becomes evident, particularly in the financial media, will be indicative that most people have already sold. They'll no longer have a financial interest in the market going upwards, and they'll have an emotional interest in seeing it going down in order to prove their sale correct. So sentiment deteriorates rather quickly once someone has already sold. And right now, people are probably taking profits, but if we see markets moving below their 200-day moving averages and breaking their progressions of higher reaction lows, we'll see people taking significant losses, and that will increase the deterioration in sentiment even further. But again, that is also an indication that more people have sold and we're coming closer to the next good buying opportunity. So while we have had this big move and there isn't a lot of evidence that it is over just yet, there is light at the end of the tunnel. We know that monetary conditions will remain extraordinarily accommodative. There is no central bank is going to be raising interest rates in a meaningful way in the USA or in Europe, if the stock market is not performing, and the sovereign debt crisis alone in Europe is enough to ensure that interest rates will not be going up in the Eurozone for the foreseeable future. So we know that monetary conditions are going to remain accommodative, and we know that quantitative easing is in the future of the Eurozone. I don't see how they were going to be able to avoid some form of quantitative easing, and given the way that spreads are moving upwards, that quantitative easing could be really quite spectacular in scope. All of that money is not going to find its way into the Eurozone. It will spread all over the world, and the ECB will probably have quite a lot of difficulty sanitizing it. So that will send money into speculative assets, and Asia remains the GDP growth center of the world. It's the population center of the world. It's the center for the growth in consumption and the global middle class, and remains a prime destination for investment flows. And when one contrasts the troubles that continue to plague Europe and the more systemic or longer term problems of the USA, then there's a strong argument for investing elsewhere where those problems simply don't exist. Now, they probably have other problems, such as their ability to handle such large inflows, or China's problem of containing inflation. And they have a number of the smaller Asian countries have had massive moves in their property markets. But those are comparatively nice problems to have, rather than the debt spiral that is currently on the menu for Southern Europe. So, fuller money themes of the commodity super cycle and emerging Asia in particular, and indeed commodity producing Latin America, remain very much on track. And while weak at the moment, the chances are we are being presented with the next good buying opportunity. And I think with that, hopefully not having rambled too much, I will leave you for the weekend. I'll be in London next week to teach our chart seminar and a private seminar the week after. And there will certainly be a lot to talk about. And I wish a good weekend to all of you. And thank you for your time.